everybody. My name's Alana, and I'm an alcoholic. I was considered myself so short, and then I just put this up here. I was like, wow, I'm kind of tall. Maybe it's because I'm up here. Thanks to the committee for asking me. Thank you so much, Keith and Tina and DC and all the wonderful people that have walked up to me today and shook my hand and welcomed me. It's an honor and a privilege to be sober. Amen. And it's an honor and a privilege to stand up here in front of you as the woman that I am today. And I started drinking at 13 years old in a place called Yucca Valley. Are you freaking kidding me? Thank you. Good night. That's all I got to say. Good old dad had his time in New York City, famous restaurant, Downey's. All the actors used to live or hang out there. Had a courageous, young, you know, fun time in New York City. My mom and dad split when I was one. My mom came to L.A. My dad stayed in New York and decided he was a writer and, you know, had all these great things going on and decided, you know, Yucca Valley sounds like a great place. God bless my father. He still lives in Yucca Valley to this day. And my story kind of skips around because it's kind of like my head kind of skips around, like my lifestyle skips around. And my mom was a manic depressive, crazy lady who just like, God bless my mom. She was kind of the woman who, put it this way, she was a race car driver. She was the first woman to go in the men's division and won, okay? Guys would come up to her, flaunt up to her, say stuff like, you know, if I told you you had a beautiful body, would you hold it against me? You know, stuff like that was just weird stuff with my mom. My dad was more of an introverted intellect, and therefore I was split in the middle, and I was a little crazy intellect. Not really. And when I was a bad girl, I was sent to my father's house in Yucca Valley. And so I was scared of this place, and I was really scared of my dad because, unfortunately, you know, the relationships happen is when you know, your father's an a-hole, and, you know, we go through that thing when we're divorced and don't like each other and don't work a program. So my first drink was in Yucca Valley, and it was at my friend's house, Lori, and her parents were out of town, and we were 13 years old, and her dad was a paramedic, and we always remember this red box in the closet, and like we just knew about this red box. We didn't quite know exactly what was into it, you know, in there, but the adults were always in the room with the red box in the closet, and there I had a bar, and there's always mixed drinks and whatnot. And so we always remembered screwdrivers. So they left. We sat in a circle as a bunch of girls, and we decided to make screwdrivers. You know, vodka. Was it vodka? I don't even know how to make a screwdriver anymore. Vodka and orange juice, you know. And so we had a big pitcher of screwdrivers, and everybody took a sip. And there was about six girls. And I was the second to the last girl. And there was about this much left in the screwdriver. And so I grabbed it. And I downed the whole entire thing. I mean, people were like, and my very first drink, I went into a blackout. 13 years old, Yucca Valley, blackout. So I came to in a shower. And my, you know, this guy was slapping me in the face. And like, I remember there were six girls. And I'm thinking, where the heck did this guy come from? And I'm like, you know, and I look up, and I'm like, wow, he's cute. And I'm thinking, let's drink again. And what I learned in retrospect in Alcoholics Anonymous, that this is a disease of progression. It's a progressive disease. And in the very beginning in Yucca Valley, California, life was kind of funny and kind of cute at moments. To give you a tidbit of my background, my mom and dad divorced when I was one. They put me into a foster home because my mom was a control freak and my dad was weak. And I hate saying that because I have a relationship with my father today, but that at the time he did the best he could. And in that foster home in Reseda, California, I was beaten and I was molested every single day until I was 8 years old. And I had the worst childhood that I can ever imagine anybody having to go through. And I remember being a little seven-year-old with bruises all over her body and broken things and not so nice things happening to me at a, you know, a sexual point. And, you know, when that screwdriver hit my lips, a lot of things changed in my life. You know, it was, I can't say that, this is it, I found it. I can't really go there, but all I know is for that 1 second, that blackout was like an opening to the dark side. And I thought it was not. I thought it was an opening to, like, freedom. And in the beginning, it was freedom. Because I went to high school, or I went to parties in Yucca Valley. We went up to this place that's called FM. I'll leave it at that. And we used to drink, and it just started getting worse and worse and worse for me. And by the time I was 15 years old, I'd had enough of my father and I'd had enough of my mother. And basically, I was sick of the screaming, I was sick of the fighting, and I was sick of everybody telling me what to do, but they didn't have any rules. They didn't have any structure. They didn't have any love. They didn't have any kind of discipline. It was always chaotic. And, you know, my mom was in L.A., and she was at this time of her life of the 70s, and she went to primal screaming therapy. And so, you know, I would come home from school when I was at school, and everybody in the household was screaming, yelling, and throwing pots and pans across the room because they were getting out their feelings. And I would walk in the room and just go, whoa, here we go. You know, there goes the pan, you know. And I walk in the back, and I put on my headphones, and I just live my life, you know, in music. And cut to 18 years old, I'm going to back up again. I was 15 years old. Like I said, my life is all over the place. 15 years old, and I decided that I'd had enough of my parents. And so we had one last horrible experience, which I won't get into. And I basically looked at my mom and my dad. My mom was visiting my father. And I basically said, I'm done. I'm leaving. And my mom said, okay. And she helped me pack my bags, 15 years old. And she said, have a nice trip. And so I packed my bags, and I moved in with my boyfriend, with her mom, with his mom. And his mom had 16 years of sobriety. And it was my first introduction to, like, a seed. We'll put it that way. A seed was planted. Couldn't tell you anything about it. Couldn't tell you one thing. Women around, books, things, gibberish. A-A. Yeah, okay. You know? Like, gotta go. And, you know. So I lived with Sean from when I was 15 until I was 20 years old. And, you know, that was my first love of my life. And my dad tried to, you know, rescue me, and I basically said, I'm done. I'm never going to be who you want me to be. I'm going to be me. And so I proceeded to live a long life of drugs and alcohol. When I was 19 years old, 20 years old, we moved down to Palm Springs. Woohoo! Graduating now from Yucca Valley. And we got this little place, you know, wherever, over on Riverside Drive. And I got a job as a cocktail waitress, and I worked at the Red Onion. So I'm in Palm Desert working in the mall, and, you know, I'm 19, and I'm a cocktail waitress. And it was the 80s, and nobody really cared. And I did what I had to do to get that job. You know, the guy that interviewed me asked for my qualifications. I said, I drink well, I socialize, and a couple of other things. And he said, great, you're hired. Use your imagination. I'm not that person today, and I'm not proud of it. And so I slang drinks for a really long time. And then cocaine came across the picture. And I know this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I'll just skaze through it just so you get an idea. And so I decided to just deal kilos of cocaine cross-country. Thank you, FedEx. And so my house became this score house, and I became the dealer in Palm Springs. And I would put the little something-something underneath your cocktail napkin. I'd serve your drink. I'd get a lot of money in return, and I'd have a nice day. And I was buzzing through the little red onion. And, you know, as our first speaker was saying, you know, if it got a little too uncomfortable, if it just wasn't right, I had to quit that job and go to the next, you know. And I'm coming home one night, and I'm 20 years old, and I'm driving drunk. And I'm on Highway 111, I mean, I'm on Palm Canyon. And all of a sudden, I look behind me and I see these red lights. And I was like, oh my God, this is not happening to me. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and, you know, we close up at 2, we get wasted, 3:30, we drive home. And I get pulled over. And as I said, it's a progressive disease and it's fun in the beginning. And I roll down my window. I'm trying to roll down my window, and the police officer's looking inside, and he says, you know, can I see your driver's license? I'm trying to shove it in, like, you know, the glass is still there. Whoops. And as I'm trying to roll down the window, and I get out of the car, I stumble out of the car, and I have to do all these sobriety field tests. Well, you know, I don't know about you guys sober, but I can't stand on one leg and put my head back and start doing this even sober. But, you know, we did the best we could at that time, didn't we? So he starts to say this crazy stuff like, okay, I want you to say the ABCs backwards. Like, are you kidding me right now? I can't even do that now. So I'm dyslexic, and you'd think it would be a very easy task for me, okay? And quit school, 15 years old. I'm a drug dealer. I'm a bartender. I'm a cocktail waitress. Who needs school? Completely different stories here. And so I get out of the car. I mean, I'm standing there, and I'm like, wow, this is like, say the ABCs backwards. And so I start getting all cocky. I'm like, oh, alcoholic thinking. A, B, C, D. FG. He did not think that was funny at all. And his partner is hysterically laughing in the side of the street. And I'm looking at his partner. Because what do? We identify with the, you know, the laughter still. And he's looking at me like, you are an idiot. And so he goes, Miss Downey, put your hands behind your back. And I'm like, all right, not even knowing what the hell is going on. And he slips the handcuffs on, and I go to Indio jail. Good old Indio jail. I have lots of these stories. So I spent the night in Indio jail. I get out, and I drink Jack Daniels. And I don't drink out of cocktail glasses. I don't even think I own a cocktail glass. I had paper cups and plates at the time. And I drink out of the bottle. You throw off the cap, you pull it back, you get that warm fuzzy, the feeling of shame and humiliation dissipates for the moment. You feel a little bit comfortable until you get into that Zen mode and you start all over. And so I'm cut to 6 months later, and I'm coming back from a New Year's Eve party in Yucca Valley. Woohoo! And I'm driving drunk because I'm a control freak and I can drive when I'm drinking because I know what I'm doing. And so I'm driving home and I'm on Highway 111. I was on Highway 111 last night coming to this AA convention, and I had a sense memory of that night. I get pulled over that night on New Year's Eve. 1989, we'll say. I don't even, or 19, God, it's even before that. It's probably like 19, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's in the 80s. And I get pulled over that night, and I'm in a blackout. And it's a progressive disease, and I'm not anybody but a very angry person because I have a lot of feelings and stuff inside of me that I haven't let out in the appropriate manner. And so I get pulled over, and this is how the story was told to me. I get pulled over, and they pull me to the back of the cop car, and all I remember is and it's my head on the back of the car, and my hair is being pulled up, and it's like this over, and my hair and my head's just being banged on the back of the cop car. And I'm like starting to wake up now, just a little bit. And I wake up and I see a billy club being swung at my face. And I'm like, holy caca, what the heck is going on right now? And I'm coming to, and I'm like, it's not like you can go, wait a minute, can we just stop, freeze frame? What is going on right now? I just got here. Hold on. Can we talk about this? It's not going to happen. And the billy club is being swung at my head over and over by a woman police officer, and have mashed contusions all over my face. And my hair's clumps is being ripped out. Nice New Year's Eve, huh? Progression. And I get slammed in the back of the car, and they decided to use an example out of me, and they drive 100 miles an hour down Highway 111 and slam on the brake as my head hits the grill. Now, I'm not a vision for you, let me tell you, and I'm not happy. And I get to Indio jail again, and I'm starting to wake up, and I see this woman named Rosie sitting next to me, and she was a big, huge lady named Rosie, and she was not a nice woman, and she did not like me. But I just looked at her with my bloody face, and she just knew, leave me alone. And I got out that night, and you think you'd learn, huh? I got out that night, and I called one of my friends, and the relationship had gone astray. After 6 years, Sean and I broke up because alcoholism was more important. Freudian slip, alcoholism was more important. Alcohol was more important than him, than school, than love, than feelings, than anything. And it's not by choice. It's because it's a phenomenon of craving that I cannot stop. It's like effing a gorilla. It ain't over until the gorilla says it's over. So I get home, I peel off the Jack Daniels cap, and I back down that Jack Daniels, and I finish the pitcher, I finish the pint, and I grab my Freebase pipe, and I get the ringing in my ear, and anything that can take the pain away. And a couple months later, I get a phone call, and I'm living alone on Riverside. This was when I was on Riverside Drive. And it's like 6 a.m., and I get a phone call, and like I just maybe got to like that little nap thing. And the phone rings, and I answer the phone, and I gotta back up again. When I was 18 years old, my mom got remarried, and she married a 20-year-old named Kyle. Now, it's in the 80s, and it's the big punk rock era. And so I got black makeup, a purple mohawk, a black leather jacket, and she's marrying a guy named Kyle with topsiders, an alligator shirt, and his collar rolled up. Are you effing kidding me right now? What is going on? And I'm dating a 30-year-old. They're living in Colorado, and one more time, my mom apologizes. Please forgive me for all the horrible things I did to you. Please forgive me. And I always wanted to forgive her. I always wanted to forgive my mom. And so I always give my mom a chance, because she's my mom, and I love her more than anything in the universe. And she's that control freak, like you have to vacuum the marks the same way, and you can't walk on the marks, so you have to walk on the furniture, because that makes sense. No wire hangers, think I'm kidding. She saw Mommy Dearest too much, and she decided to like make it her habit. And so like the house was like immaculate, like a mausoleum. And you know, one day I threw an apple in the garbage can in the bathroom. And you think, you know, like why would you even think like anything about that? So I threw an apple in the garbage can in the bathroom, and I got severely punished by my stepdad. And I said, you know what, I gotta go. And so I left, and that's the last words that I ever said to my mom was, you're never going to make me be who you want me to be. I got to go. So I get this phone call at 6 a.m., and it's a Sun Valley, Idaho Sheriff Department. Oh, my God, I'm in Idaho. I don't even know where I am right now. Did I go to Idaho? Where did I go? I don't even know how to, I don't even have any money. Did I go on a train, a plane, a bus? Oh my God, where am I going? Idaho, where the hell is Idaho? I've never even been out of state. What am I doing? You've got to be kidding me right now. Where the hell is Idaho? Who are you? He's like, hi, my name is Sheriff So-and-so. And I'm like, oh my God, I went to jail in Idaho. Do I owe him money? I owe him money. And he goes, I'm sorry to inform you, but your mom and your stepdad have been killed. Okay, so I didn't go to Idaho. And that's when my whole life ended. And I threw the phone across the room, and I went into an alcoholic cocaine rage, and I pulled everything off the wall, and I broke glass, and did what I had to do, and I grabbed the Jack Daniels, and I finished it. And I grabbed the free bass pipe, and I finished that, and I got back on the phone, and the guy's still on the phone. And I'm like, what happened? And he said, I'm sorry to let you know on the phone that your stepdad and mom bought a gun. Never gets easier. And he shot her twice in the head, and then he shot himself. Whew. Well, I'm 22 years old, and I'm done. I am done. Who? What kind of God would put a little kid through being molested and beaten her whole life and then have her stepmom dad kill her and then himself? What kind of animal is out there to make me live the things that I have to live by? And so I made a conscious decision to never love a human being as long as I live. And let me tell you, I did it. I closed off, I clamped up, I locked it up, I swallowed the key, and F you, everybody. Whew. 3 months later, I had to go to San Diego to clean up their estate, and I'm a drinker. I like to drink. I'm graduating to tequila, because it's getting there faster. Can we get to the worm? Can we get to the worm? I can. I can outdrink any guy in the room. Beer bongs? Yucca Valley, man. Are you kidding me? What else is there to do? Shotguns? There goes Alana again. I'm in San Diego, California. I'm in San Diego, and it's July 22nd, 1988. And I'm coming out of Second Wind Bar. And I go outside the back, because that's what we do. And I get into my car, because I'm a driver. And I get pulled over 3 blocks away from the bar. And they don't even ask me any questions. They don't even do anything. They just look at me. They threw me in the back of the car. Handcuffs are a little bit tighter. And I'm on my way to Sybil Brand. The handcuffs are tighter, and I just keep going, but you don't understand. You don't understand. You don't understand. And I'm like in this alcoholic, like, psychosis. You don't understand. You don't understand. You don't understand. And the guy just, like, turns up the music and goes to Sybil Brand. And so I'm sitting in this jail cell, the padded one for people like me. And he comes in, and I'm a mess, and I've, you know, I have stories like the 80s, we all had water beds, right? I had a water bed. Water beds and alcoholics don't go well together at all. You know, where I'd wake up and, you know, I didn't have a mohawk at the time, but like, yeah, throw up and a little alcohol makes a mohawk, you know? Or and you'd look over to the next, you know, light, the right of me, and there's him. I wish he was even slightly as good looking as you. And you're like, how the hell did he get there? Oh my God, what's his name? How is he? How? Where are we? Are we in my room? We're in my waterbed. Oh my God, how do I get here? What's his name? What do? I drove. Oh my God, I drove him. He's at my house. He's in my house. How do I get him out? What do I do? Oh my God, I don't even know his name. What am I going to say? And I'm not a vision for you with the mohawk puke hair. So I thought it'd be clever because I'm really clever in my alcoholism. And I look over and I go, so, how do you spell your name? Again. And he goes, B-O-B. Just kidding, Bob. I just was, you know. I think we need to go home now. I think you need to go home now. I think you need a cab. Here's $20. Gotta go. Slam. You know, it's funny now. It's hysterical now. But man, in the moment, it is horrifying. Ladies, help me out here. So I'm in Sybil-Brand. And I get a phone call. I get to make a phone call. And I get one phone call. And you think, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't have any friends. I have nobody. I didn't go out there and make friends when I was drinking and using. I made enemies. I was a friend because I was the dealer. Everybody loved Alana. But when Alana ran out of stuff, who cares about her? You know? And so I have no friends. And once upon a time, I was working at Delmonico's over in the, you know, the Desert Fashion Plaza, and I was a bartender. And my friend Gary, who still to this day runs the tobacco shop over here on wherever, on the highway, in Palm Springs. And he used to come in to my bar on Wednesdays, and he'd grab his cocktail, and I'd put something underneath for him, and we'd have a nice day. And every Wednesday, he came in for happy hour and a little something-something. Well, one day, Gary disappeared, and he disappeared for 6 months. And everybody blamed me and, you know, the whole routine. The lawn is the worst, and, you know, I don't know where he is, swear. So 6 months later, Gary comes walking into my bar. And I like dark bars, you know, the smell of booze just is there, and cigarettes when you could smoke in bars. And, you know, there was no sawdust because I thought I'd get a little classier job, you know. And he comes walking into my bar, and he's like, and he's smiling, and he's coming closer to me, and he's like glowing, and he's coming closer to me, and I'm like, Gary, you need a drink. And I put his Greyhound, and he sits at the bar, and he goes, oh, no, no, I don't drink. And I'm like, you don't drink? What? Huh? He goes, no, 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 I don't. And I'm like, oh, well, here, have a little something. He goes, no, 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 I don't do drugs. And I'm like, what the hell is wrong with Gary? He's looking a little, you know, glowing and snappy happy do or whatever. And I go, what's wrong with you, dude? And he goes, I'm clean and sober in a program called Cocaine Anonymous. And I said, well, good for you, man. Right on. And he goes, I just came to tell you that my life is amazing. And I'm clean and sober 6 whole months. And my life has never been better. And I said, well, bro, go to it, man. Have a nice day. And Gary left my bar. And it was the perfect 12-step call for a girl like me. He didn't point the finger and tell me I had a problem. He didn't do this thing. He didn't have a lecture. He didn't do, because I wouldn't listen. You tell me anything, first off, you look at me in the eye and I got a problem. Don't you look at me in the eye and try to get down. I'm done. Don't get close to me. Don't look at me. Don't talk to me. Leave me alone. So here I am in Sybil-Brand with one phone call. And I call 411. And I ask for Gary Donovan, and they have his number. And it's 3 a.m. on July 22nd, 1988, and Gary answers the phone. And I haven't talked to Gary in 12 years. Hi, Gary, it's Alana. He's like, huh? Oh, yeah, Alana. I'm like, Gary, I'm in trouble. I'm in Sybil-Brand. I have 3 DUIs. I have a cocaine arrest. I got arrested for cocaine at the Red Onion. A gold straw rolled out of my wallet. I went to jail. Indio is my favorite place in the whole universe. I always went to Indio jail. I was considered a weekender. Oh, hey, Alana's back on the weekends again. And I said, and my stepdad killed my mom, and then he killed himself. I want to die. I don't want to live. I hate my life. I remember you going to this weird program. What do I do? What about this chic 10-day follow-up thing? I've heard about that on TV. Can I do that? And I was dead serious, like, that'll work for me, won't it? He said, Alana, don't drink until you get out of jail. Not a problem, Gary. Call information, find a meeting nearest you called Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous will save your life. It saved mine. By that time, he'd been between Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. And he said, I love you. Good luck. And he hung up. Are you kidding me? This is my phone call? There has to be a better solution. So on July 23rd, 1988, I walked up the North Shores Olana Club in Pacific Beach, California, and I've been sober since that day. Amen. So let me paint a little picture for you. I'm 215 pounds. I have purple spiky hair, short. My heart and soul are gone. I have no sunlight of the spirit. I look at you like I want to kill you. I'm an angry bitch from hell. And I'm pending 2 years in prison. I'm not a happy camper. And so I walk up to these steps and all I can hear is wah, 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 God. Sponsor. I mean, it's always this the stuff. Are you joking? And so I had to go to court, and I had to go to court, and I had to serve some time, and I had to serve some time. And so, you know, my lawyer at the time pleaded me out of the whole, you know, poor me, my mom did her thing, and, you know, she's a young kid, and she's, you know, by the time I went to court, I had 6 months of sobriety. And so I got 3 years picking up trash on the side of the roads with this, you know, the orange vest and the orange hat. Yeah, Caltrans. Woohoo! How many Caltrans here? Right? We'll talk after the meeting. And then I had to go to Descanso lockdown unit on weekends, and I had to wash sheriff buses with toothbrushes, because that's an important task. So Monday through Sunday, I was San Diego counties. And let me tell you, I am beyond grateful for that. Because left to my, and I, my driver's license was revoked for the first 3 years. And I am beyond grateful because left to my own thinking, my own devices, I would have picked up a drink and a drug the next day. Are you kidding me? And the journey began. And it began with my ears closed and my mouth shut, and my eyes halfway open, and my heart clamped, and the key way down in here, and there was still hope for me. There was still hope for me. Because you guys believed in me. Because you guys would walk across the room, even though I toss a chair at you, and say, keep coming back. And so I met people like Carl M., Carl Morris, and Earl Hightower, and Matt Kimball, and Alabama and Luana and people who totally saved my life. And as you can tell, I moved to LA from San Diego. And there was this thing called a sponsor. So that word kept coming up in these meetings, and they told me to keep coming back. And I thought there was the only one meeting at 6 o'clock on Sundays, and so I'd come back at 6 o'clock on Sundays. And you know, as I'm leaving, the girl said, "Oh, we'll see you tomorrow." And I'm like, "I go tomorrow? What are you talking about tomorrow?" She goes, "There's a meeting here tomorrow at 6 o'clock. There's a meeting here every night at 6 o'clock." And I was like, "Really?" And I'd walk home, but it planted that seed. And so I was like five blocks from my house, and every day I would walk into the Olano Club and sit there and listen to the stuff that I couldn't hear. And so I went downstairs, and they had this little, you know, dining area for the Olano Club, and there's this chef there, and his name was Gino, and he had long dark hair, and he was Mexican, and he had the sunlight of the spirit in his eyes. And so I used to sit there and drink coffee and look at Gino, because he always was like happy and like, you know, slinging dishes and cussing in Spanish and laughing his butt off. And he always had a big book at his window, and people would walk up to him and go, you know, he was what you called a big book thumper. I didn't know what that meant then. And they'd always walk up and say, "Hey, Gino, what's on page 93? And he'd go, oh, whatever. So I walked up to Gino's window and I asked Gino to sponsor me. He says, oh, mija, hold on now. Men work with men and women work with women. And I said, yeah? And I hadn't read the book. I don't know how to read. I had a fifth grade reading level and I had dyslexia. I didn't go to high school. I dealt drugs. So I put the book, I picked up the book and I said, cocky as I am, don't even know I am. And I said, where does that say that in the big book? And he said, oh, mija, I don't know. And I said, well, you either find it now or sponsor me. And he said, I said, or I'm going to get drunk. I was such a manipulator. And he said, okay, mija, I will work with you as a temporary sponsor. And I said, okay. I don't even know what a sponsor is. All I know, I'm supposed to have one. Gino became my sponsor and was my sponsor for my first 8 years of sobriety. And Gino taught me how to read. And Gino taught me how to do the Lord's Prayer. And Gino taught me how to cross my legs at a dinner table. Come on, people. And he taught me which fork to use when you sit at a dining room table. And he taught me how to wear a dress. He bought me my first dress. And he taught me how to be a lady. And we'd sit there every Wednesday at a big book study. And everybody would read a paragraph and move it along, and it came to me. And every week I'd pass it, because I was ashamed I couldn't read. And the very first thing that Gino asked me was, when I asked him to sponsor me, is, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober, Alana? And I said yes, with not knowing even what that meant. And so that Wednesday, he said, it's time for you to read, mija. And I said, oh, no, it's not. And he said, oh, yes, it is. And I said, Gino, if you make me read, I swear to God, I'll slit your throat. And at the time, I still carried a gun, which he was kindly trying to remove from me. And not at the time, but like in the big picture. And he said, mija, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? That was the first thing I asked you. And I was like, fucker. And so it was chapter 3, more about alcoholism. And it took me 20 minutes to read the paragraph. And I stammered through the whole thing. And I stuttered. And I didn't know the words. And not one of you laughed at me. And the room was as quiet as it is now. And after I read, the whole room stood up and applauded for me. I was never in my life loved growing up. My mom told me I was fat and ugly and a piece of shit. I was beaten, I was molested, and I was never loved. And so the first time in my life, without me knowing it, the magic and love of Alcoholics Anonymous smothered me when they stood up. And I went, without me knowing, it wasn't a conscious thing. It was a subconscious thing that happened, and the magic veiled over me that day. And I remember it right now like it was yesterday. And I went home, and I just remember my step being a little bit like zippity-doo-dah, zippity-yay. And I remember picking up trash on the side roads, you know, and we hadn't quite done the 12 steps yet, and it was time because I had to learn how to read, and Gino made me look up every word in the dictionary, and I'm very grateful. And if you think you know what we admitted, powerless, alcohol, you think you know what those words mean? I challenge you to look them up in the dictionary. I don't care if you're a day sober or if you're 50 years sober. Let me tell you, it's nothing that you can, and it, you can revisit it today for what it means for you today. And I looked up all those words, and man, what a powerful thing happened to me. And so I'm picking up trash on the side of the roads, and, you know, here I am with the orange vest and the hat and the purple hair, and I'm 215 pounds, and I look like a big pop tent. And at first it was like, do-do-do, and then I'm starting to get seething resentment. Like, how dare they? Don't they know who I am, 7 months sober, picking up trash on the side of the roads? who am I anyway, right? I'm an alcoholic doing my time. So I'm pissed off, and I start, like, slamming the garbage in the thing, and I'm all pissed off, and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, something happened to me. And I call it my mini spiritual awakening. All of a sudden, I smelt the ocean, because it was in Encinitas, right off the ocean. And I took in that breath, and I thought, wow. And I closed my eyes for that 1 second, and I had my face up, and I felt the sunlight on my face. And I don't know about you, but I was always about drinking in dark bars, smoking cocaine in a closet, and being in Sybil Brand. You know? And then I smelt the eucalyptus trees in the air. Man, I had this feeling inside of me. Did you hear that? I had a feeling inside of me. Are you kidding me right now? I had a feeling inside of me. Do you understand what that means? I had a feeling inside of me. I got chills right now. Then I went home and I dialed Gino and I said, you'll never guess what happened. I felt like an idiot saying it because it sounded so stupid, but I was like, I smelled the ocean and I had the sunlight on my face and I smelled the, and I didn't feel ether and I didn't feel pain and I had this moment and it was beautiful and oh my God, and I'm alive. And he said, oh, mija, you have God. And I was like, this is great. What a beautiful time I'm gonna have. And well, you know how it goes. Then we got into the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, I don't mean it in a negative way at all. I mean it in a, like, holy, you know, talking about feelings, you know? They're not all joyous and wonderful, like you smell the ocean and woo-ha, you know? And I had to relive some of my childhood memories, and I had to relive the grieving of alcohol and drugs out of my body, and I had to relive as a child of what happened to me, and I had to relive. I got to relive. I got to live. I got to be awake. And so Gino told me that this is a place where you can hang up your fantasies and your dreams will come true, mija. You can hang up your fantasies and your dreams will come true. Well, I never had dreams. I always had fantasies. I was in Yucca Valley. Like, I was destined to be a bartender at, like, you know. Anyway. For real. Like, that was my goal, was to be a bartender in Palm Springs. And not disengaging anybody that's a bartender in Palm Springs. It's just that was my only vision that I could have. And so I moved to LA because I wanted to be an actress. And he said, you know what, mija, go for it. You have the 12 steps behind your, you know, behind you. You have life, you have sobriety, and go do it. And so I went by myself, and there was those people that said, oh, you're gonna move to Smell A? Oh, to be an actress like everybody else? And I said, you know what, honey? I didn't ask for your opinion. Gino told me that I can hang up my fantasies and my dreams can come true, and I'm willing to take a risk because Gino taught me and the 12-step taught me, and I have God in my life today. And if I choose to go to LA, that's my business, not yours. And I came to LA, and I've been in LA ever since. And I went to these crazy meetings called Architects of Adversity. Anything goes. And I was still an angry person because what happens to a person like me is I'm a scared little girl. I'm like a little gremlin bear girl inside. And if you threaten me, if you challenge me, if you intimidate me, I get scared inside, but outside comes the beast. And I lash at you. And so I went to these Architects of Adversity, and, like, we'll call her Beth. Beth used to come up to me all the time. Hi, welcome. How are you? I'm so glad you're here. And I'm like, you know what, Beth? You need to leave me alone. And so I'd sit in the corner and do my thing, and Beth always came up to me, and I go, Beth, I've warned you. I want to be left alone. And so what happened to me was I'd throw chairs at Beth, and I would... It wasn't nice, I admit it, and I tossed it in her head, and it wasn't a pretty picture. And I called Gino, and I was like, what's happening right now? I'm throwing chairs at people. I'm not carrying a gun anymore, you know? I'm not fist fighting. I would walk up to men that were taller and bigger than me, and I just cold clocked them in the face just to do it because I was stupid, because I was in fear, you know? And I'm happy to say that I stopped fighting after I turned 5 years sober. Took a long time. And you know what? I did it. And I don't do that anymore. And so he said, "Oh, mija, you have character defects." And I go, "I do not. I don't even know what they are." I'm like, "I do not. Do I remember 6 and 7? Kinda. Well, you have to go home and you have to read 6 and 7. You got to figure out what's going on." And I was like, character defects, dictionary in one hand, you know, 12 steps in the other. And I was like, "Oh my God, I do have character defects." And got to make amends to Betty. What a drag. I mean, you know, like what I started to learn after a while is, why do the stuff that you want to do in the moment? Because you're always going to have to make amends for it. So I stopped being in the moment of my feelings. I started to learn that just because you have a feeling of rage doesn't mean you have to act on it. Just because you have a feeling of lust doesn't mean you have to act on it. What a novel idea. Just because you're super happy in a very serious moment doesn't... Funerals, are you kidding me? I laugh at funerals. It's this horrible, horrible thing, and I'm working on it. I have such tragic life. My life is tragic. So instead of, like, being who I am, you know, like you're supposed to be, is, like, really sad in a funeral, and, you know. And so I think it's just, like, because I've been through it so many times that I'm just warped, you know. And I laughed at my best friend's funeral, like, hysterically laughed. I'm like, "Oh, it's Alana," you know. Anyway, and so, you know, I got to go through my 9th step and start to give back what was freely given to me, you know, and I became an actress and I didn't like it, and I became the behind the scenes, and I discovered that I liked writing. And I became a published poet. I'm a high school dropout with no education, and I became a published poet. And my dreams were starting without me doing a thing. Well, I'm working my ass off with the 12 steps, but I'm not seeking things. They're coming to me because the obstacles are being pushed away because I'm doing the work. I work my ass off in Alcoholics Anonymous. I do the 12 steps like it's the... I do the 12 steps like, if I don't, I will die. Because if I don't do the 12 steps, I will die. I will die a slow, horrible death. And so I became a published poet, and then all of a sudden, like, I love music, and this opportunity came along, and I became, you know, a promoter in the music industry. And all of a sudden, all this magic started to happen around me for the outsides. And I started going on tours all over the place, and magic started happening, and I was partying, like, sober with the rock and roll stars. And I was, like, living the dream. I was just being me. And I'd have a big book in one hand, I'd have Gino's hand in one hand, and a newcomer's in the other. And I'd go and do these shows, and I'd see these little, like, girls doing shows too, and they were like out of their brains and like, "Ooh, there she is, she's new, I can tell already." And I'd walk up to her and I go, "Are you a friend of Bill's?" She's like, 30 days. And I go, "I got it, 10 years, hold my hand and we'll do this gig together and you don't have to drink and use." And man, I started taking my life in Alcoholics Anonymous out in the big world, because Gino told me that you don't hide out in AA meetings. You stay here to get sober and clean, and you check in every day, but you go out there and you live life, because there's sick people out there, and let me tell you, they need your help. And I was like this, like, conqueror girl. I'm gonna help them all. I was like, "I'll do it." And so I did this gig, and I remember that I needed to make amends to Sean, my first boyfriend of 6 years. And so I hadn't seen him in 15 years, and I would, so, you know, I don't know about you, but when I get something in my head, I'm obsessed about it, and it won't leave my brain until I get it done. And so I, you know, through long trials of trying to get his phone number, I found his phone number, and he lived in Texas. And I was doing a gig in Texas, so happens, and I called him up, and I asked him if I could come see him, and he said, "Absolutely," and he'd been, you know, looking for me, and I went to his house, and he was a single father, and, you know, doing his deal, and he was still the same person. And I say that in a very loving way, but he hadn't grown spiritually, mentally, or physically. Well, you know what I mean. So anyway, we had a weekend, and there was a lot of tears, and there was a lot of love, and there was a lot of stuff happening in that room that day. And so I came home, and I lived in a little studio apartment in Palm, in, no, Alana, that's where it all began. I lived in a little studio apartment in Hollywood, and I was doing these gigs, and I was never home because I was on the road like 20 plus hours a day, 7 days a week. And I came home, and I was pregnant. Not usually how I make amends. And but he was my first love, and yeah, whatever. I'll explain it. So I made it, I mean, I came home, and so we stood the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. And I'm sitting here, and I'm about to jump on a year tour on a bus. And I had friends who I made in Alcoholics Anonymous who embraced me, and I embraced them, and one of my girlfriends broke my heart open. She was the first woman to ever really love me, and vice versa. She was the first person that I ever told my deepest, darkest secrets to. I told everything to Gino, but that what happened for me is more to be revealed. And when I was 5 years sober is when I remembered being molested. I didn't remember until I was five. And so I got to tell her that experience and stuff. And she, you know, we became best friends and inseparable for many, many, many years. And so I'm sitting here going, I can't do, you know, no. I'm 13 years sober. I'm jumping on a year tour. This is the best time in my life. I live in this studio apartment. I'm having a blast. You got to be joking. What? I don't know what to do. So I, at the moment, decided I'm not going to do this. But I, inside, I'm having a conflict. And so I grab my girlfriend, Daniela, and we go to the Coffee Bean in Hollywood, and I'm standing in line, I'm giving my little tea or coffee or whatever, and this little boy comes walking up to me, and he's all of 3 years old. And I see him, like, all over the little Coffee Bean, and he kept, like, peeking behind his dad's shoulder and peeking behind his pants and looking at me, and I'm still a little bit off. I mean, I know I'm 13 years sober, but I'm still don't trust at moments when they're the most important moments to trust God. And I'm like, what is going on? And this little boy runs up to me and he goes, "You're beautiful," and runs away. Now, you all know you have that God. You all know you have that little personal God that knows how to touch just you, that knows your little secret that nobody else knows. It's happened to you, otherwise you wouldn't be sitting here in this room tonight. And my God knows that when I get afraid and what I don't believe, I go back to that little girl who is tortured, and I don't feel beautiful, and I don't feel loved, and I don't feel taken care of, and I'm afraid. And he said that to me, and I broke down. And I looked up, and I said, "You got it." And so on February 19, 2001, I became a mom to a beautiful baby boy named Shay. And unfortunately, Sean couldn't arise to the occasion. He left me when I was 3 months pregnant. So here I am on my way to Santa Barbara to speak at a little Fiesta Days convention with my brand new car that I paid for myself. I'm 3 months pregnant. Do-do-do-do-do. I get rear-ended and smushed between these two cars. Didn't make the convention. I go to the hospital, I got whiplash, blah, blah, blah. I'm having a good old time, right? So now here I am, I'm 3 months pregnant, I have no job, I have no car, and I have no idea how I'm gonna pay rent. Like, are you kidding me? This is what I, you know. where are you now? But it's always like this. God takes away the car. Can you see me now? God takes away Sean. Can you see me now? God takes away the job. Can you see me now? In those moments, do you know those moments? We all have those moments where you just want to go, give me a break, you know? Like, you're sitting in the moment, like, this is the end. My only friend, the end. And so I'm like, you know, I give up. And God goes, thank God. And so my friend Uncle Al paid my rent. And my friend Victor told me a place that in the music industry, behind a desk, that was looking for a secretary. And then my friend Jason, who's 6 years sober, got me an old beat up Pontiac where I had to lift the hood and start the car and close the hood, 6 months pregnant. And in the moment, I was happy. You know, I got a car, I got a roof over my head, I got a job. Are you kidding me? Life is okay. It's going to be okay. Except for when you go to the damn bank and you know you want to get out of the car and go to the bank versateller. I got to get out of the car. I got to go open the hood. I got to freaking do the thing. I got to close the hood. I mean, it's not like you can just run around and keep doing this. And I'm 6 months pregnant and the hood's getting heavy, you know? So I had this beautiful boy and I looked down and I have no idea what I'm doing. And thank God I got this book called The Baby Whisperer. Thank God Gino taught me how to read. And I'm a good reader. And I'm an avid reader. And I'm a happy person. And I read this book and it changes my life. And unfortunately, when my baby boy was born, he single-handedly removed everybody that wasn't supposed to be in my life. Let me tell you. So that group of friends that were my only friends, my clique, my 10 group of friends, left because they couldn't understand that that he was the most important being. And it doesn't matter that I'm 13 years sober and that, like, they're my friends. How do I want to explain this? I was still trying to hang on to people that were toxic, but they loved me. Like my mom, you know? And I didn't know how to let go because I didn't know how to trust God. And my son was born. Man, and like, he's magic. And all of a sudden, I wasn't the most important thing, he was. And then when he became the most important thing, I did. And they left because I wasn't there for them. And, you know, but I need you. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I have a 2-month-old baby. I have no freaking clue what I'm doing. Where the hell are you? You need me? Come on. So I got this job and I'm sitting behind the desk and I'm freaking tired. I'm 200 pounds, just had a kid. I don't feel good. I haven't slept in days. I'm sober. Still going to meetings, doing the best I can, working full time. And I'm in this, the business that I was in had like this big, huge, you know, company, this big, huge building where there's other businesses inside the building. And I always see this cute guy walking by. And I go to the bathroom maybe, you know, a couple more times because he's always in the hallway. But I don't really think much of it because I'm like, you know, bags under my eyes and the baby's crying and I don't know what I'm doing. I got to go to work and And one day I look up because I don't look up very often because I'm just that kind of a person, you know. And I look up and I see this beautiful blonde hair, blue-eyed braces guy. Okay, now I don't know about you guys, but for me it was always about the Harleys and the tattoos and the bikers and the bad boys and the ranch, you know? I mean, those are my guys. God bless you. You kept me sober a long time. And so I look up and I see this blonde hair, blue-eyed brace face, and I'm like, that's cute, you know? And I don't think anything of it. And we keep passing the hallway, and then one day he looks up and he goes, hi, my name's Christian. And I said, "Hi, I'm Alana." And he goes, "Would you like to go out to lunch sometime?" And I'm like, "Sure, I would love to." And I'm thinking to myself, does he? He has no clue, you know? Like, are you kidding me right now? And I'm not at my best. And I have a 3-month-old baby at home, and I'm a single mom, and I'm tired, and I'm fat, and I'm, you know, whatever. This is just my experience. And so we go to lunch, and we have a really good time, and then he asked me to go to the Harry Connick Jr. concert. And I'm like, wow, okay, so you are cool. I'm like, who knows who Harry Connick Jr. is, especially your Connick person, you know? And we go to this show, and he goes, he's very polite. "I don't know if you're interested in this, because I know you're in the music business, and this might be the worst thing they could ask you, but would you like to go to the Harry Connick Jr. show?" I was like, yes! Like, are you kidding me? And one date after another, and he knew I was a single mom, and we used to go on hikes, and my little boy would be in the little jogger, and we'd go, like, you know, up in the canyons, Runyon Canyon, and he'd always push the jogger, and the third or fourth date, he leaned over and he said, "It's been our fourth date. Does this warrant a goodnight kiss?" Nobody's ever asked me that. And I said, "Yes, it does." And I looked down, and he's got a chip on his keychain. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me right now? "Do you know Bill Wilson?" And his face was like, "What?" And I go, "You know Bill Wilson." "How did you know that?" I'm like, "You got a chip dangling from your keychain." 14 years sober. 2. All right. Right? I made a conscious decision to never love a human being as long as I lived. And when my baby boy was born, everything had went away. And my baby boy opened my heart when he used to look up at me in his crib and just go, "Gee, goo, goo, ga, ga, gee, gee, gee," and smile, and I would be like, this is intense. And the journey began for Christian and I. And it was very, very difficult in the beginning. And I sought therapy because the big book tells me that sometimes we need to seek outside help. And then I told him that he needed to seek therapy. And he didn't agree, and we broke up. And for the first time in my life, I had the biggest boundaries that you would never believe. Because before, I had movable boundaries. I don't know about you, but it's like, oh, all right. No. All right. You know? And when my baby boy was born, all bets are off. I have boundaries, and they're glue, and they're not moving. And so I said, okay, I gotta go. And man, my heart ached like it never ached before. And I was like, you know what? You have your son, you have a job, you have God, you have one or two friends, and it's gonna be okay. And that man is so persistent. And he came up to me and he wrote me the most beautiful poem. And in the poem, at the very end, he said, "I've been seeing a therapist for the last 3 months." And on Christmas Eve 3 years ago, he got on his knee and he asked me to marry him. And I had like, I looked up and, you know, we'd given all our gifts because we're alcoholics and did it Christmas Eve and I couldn't wait till Christmas. And I look up and he goes, I have one more gift for you. And I've like got ratty hair and I got my Ugg boots on and my shorts and the fireplace is going and my hair is up. And I'm like, he goes, close your eyes. And I say, okay. And I close my eyes. And I lived in this little teeny shack in Venice Beach. And I open my eyes and I see this beautiful diamond ring. And he's sitting on his knee. And he said, Miss Solana, will you marry me? And man, I was like, you have to be joking. And I am the happiest that I've ever been in my whole entire life. And we just got married on July 10th, what, 3 years, 3 weeks ago. And my son got very, very sick, and he got an immune deficiency, and then he got gastritis, and then he got asthma, and we had a very challenging last 2 years, and we were in and out of the hospital most of the time, and it is a really hard thing to watch your son just every hour puking and coming out of both ends and 104 temperature and putting him in the bath, and you don't know if he's going to live or if he's going to die, and calling 911 on Thanksgiving because he's choking and he's not breathing. And it's like we've been to the emergency room 60 plus times in the last 2 years. And I say, you know, God's not going to get me this far to drop me off. All I can do is pour the love that Christian and I have into his heart, you know. And Shay calls him Daddy, and Shay's known Christian since he was 6 months old, and they have such a good time. They're like the best friends, you know, and my kid's such a trooper. He just gets up, and he knows when he's going to puke, and he runs to the toilet and does his thing, you know, and 104 temperature, and nobody visited us in the hospital, and again, all my friends left, and didn't matter, because the first time in my life, I have a family, a real family. I have a husband, and I have a child, and it's the most important thing, and we made it, and we had to scrape our money together and pull him out of daycare and get a nanny, and we're broke, and we're happy, you know, and we got a couple motorcycles in the backyard. We got a backyard. We got a house. We have a house. Are you kidding me? I have a house. You know, it's not mine. I don't own it, but I rent it, and I pay rent every day. I pay rent every month, and I pay it on time, because that's what you guys told me to do. Yeah, I got my driver's license back at 3 years of sobriety, and I stood in this meeting, and I stood up on the chair, and I said, I got my driver's license. Like, are you kidding me? I earned it, you know? And on Christmas this year, you know, I had that old clunky card. Okay, so it graduated to a 1986 Pontiac Firebird. We used to call it the stripper car because I look like a stripper girl with the, oh, whatever. It's just my little personality, you know. And Shay would be in the back seat and he couldn't see out the window. I'm like, look at the truck. He goes, I can't see, Mommy. And I'll be like, okay, so what? I got a car, you know. And I look, Christian, God, he always pulls something out of his little hand, you know. And he says, honey, will you help me carry in the presents? This is this Christmas. And I say, you know, and I'm tired and I don't feel good. And I'll tell you about that later. And I say, sure, and I get up, and I look outside, and I go, where are the presents? He goes, Merry Christmas, honey, and I go, what? I'm all snotty. And he goes, Merry Christmas, honey, and I look out, and all I see is this Toyota 4Runner, our car, and, like, something else. And I'm like, what? And he goes, Merry Christmas, honey, and I see this little Toyota guy with a keychain. And I look out, and I go, it's my dream car, a Toyota 4Runner. And I burst into tears, and I can't. I'm like wailing. I'm like hysterically bawling. And this little Toyota guy starts crying. He's like, Merry Christmas. And I'm like, oh my God, I got a brand new truck. And it might not be a big deal to you, but it is to me. And more so for my kid who's got his own back seat and window, and he can look out the window. We just got back from the Bahamas, and we left Shay with his grandparents. Christian's parents have been married 35 years, and they're in a happy, beautiful, wonderful relationship for 35 years. We got married at the Self-Realization Center, Christian and I. And 35 years ago, his parents got married at the Self-Realization Center. It's like an omen. It's like a beauty, you know? And we went to the Bahamas, and it was the first vacation in 4 years, and I left Shay. And you know what? For the first 3 days, it was great. And the fourth day, I'm like, I miss my son, you know? And I went snorkeling, and we swam with the sharks, and I got dropped off on a deserted island, and, you know, we had some fun, and we ate, and we ate, and we ate, and oh, I went to another program, and I lost 75 pounds. When I met Christian, I already felt it inside that I needed to be who I really wanted to be, but I was afraid to be, and he inspired me without him knowing that I knew I could chip away everything that wasn't me to get to me, that I desired. And I went to another 12-step program and I lost 75 pounds. And let me tell you, I am the lady and the woman that I never dreamed in my whole entire life. I'm the woman that I look on the TV and go, wow, I wonder what that would be like. You know, I'm a soft-spoken, loud, obnoxious, hyperactive, crazy, fun mom who has a hip problem. So I'm going to wrap it up with this. I'm having like all sorts of aches and pains in my hip area. And I'm like, what the hell is going on with me? I'm not even 40 yet, you know? And Christian's hit sick of me. You know, every time Shay's sick, what do? We take him to the doctor. Well, I'm a different, you know, martyr. Christian's like, go to the doctor. You have insurance. So I go to the orthopedic doctor, and I have to have a hip replacement. Are you kidding me? I'm like, you know, and he goes, wow, you must have been an active girl. You know, I'm like the hip mom. I snowboard, I surf, I skateboard. I'm the fun person. I did all the stuff that I never could do ever when I was drinking and using, living in Yucca Valley. You don't snowboard. You drink Jack Daniels in a beer bong. You know? I learned how to snowboard. I learned how to surf. I learned how to skateboard. I skydived. I went to the Hawaiian convention. I spoke here at the CA Palm Springs convention last year. You know, I went to Seattle World Convention. I went to the World Convention in San Diego. I'm alive. I'm happy. Who cares if I have to have a hip replacement? Keith says he's had one and he's a happy camper. He walks before me. I believe him. Earl walked before me, I believed him. Matt Kay walked before me, I believed him. The people who walk behind me, I will never turn you down. When the hand of AA reaches out, that's when I'm responsible. I don't care if you're in the coffee bean. I don't care if you're smoking cigarettes on the side of the road just having saw a movie. I don't care if you're in a fight with your husband or wife. When the hand of AA reaches out, that's where you're responsible. Because I wouldn't be here today if you didn't reach your hand, if Gary D didn't answer the phone that night in Sybil Brand. You know? I'm a rock star. Are you kidding me? All my dreams have come true. I drove in here last night and I relived that moment of the billy club being swung at my face. And I looked over at my husband with my kids sleeping in the back seat and our new Toyota 4Runner, 135 pounds, blonde hair, happy, and said, how the hell did I get here? God. So if you're wondering where the miracle is, go like this. You're sitting in it. Thanks.